What was that? February 27th? 25th? 25th. February 25th. Do you know that the U.S. Senate took a vote? Here's what they voted on. The bill was called the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Are you aware of that? Even if you're aware of that, you may not know that it passed the House in January of 2018. It passed the House. Pretty overwhelmingly, actually, surprisingly, but overwhelmingly, it passed the House. I can tell you right now, it won't pass the House. Because what happened in this last election, because the indifference of the people, because the lies are perpetuated, now all of a sudden, it's going to take the act of God again to preserve life, which it will. And my God is able. I'm not afraid. But here is the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Again, it had already passed the House a year ago. Now it's before the Senate. And they said, we got to do something with this bill. Now's the time. Why? Because I told you what happened by Governor Cuomo up in New York a couple weeks ago, that they saw that they felt the Supreme Court was beginning to shift. They said it will not protect abortion. And so in our state, it's going to be legal regardless. The governor of Virginia, the coward, followed suit because he didn't have enough brains to come up with it on his own. And so, you know what? I'm going to do this too because I'm going to get the votes of the women. And so he said it. And they said, the question was, well, wait a minute. What if that baby's born alive? What do you do with it? And then he says, that's up to the parents and the doctor. They can decide whether that child is going to live or die. And finally, it set the fire on somebody in Senate to say, we better bring this bill to light because apparently we need to. And they did. And so they brought it to light. They brought it to the floor. They brought it to the vote, and it would not pass. They needed 60 votes for cloture. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Not closure, but it's cloture. They needed 60 votes. They got 53. The rest that voted says, no, we're not going to vote for that. We're not going to. And the bill, here's what it required. It required a doctor who was performing an abortion to give medical care to a child that was born alive after the attempted abortion. If the abortion failed, the law says, wait a minute, there can't be any gray areas. We need to protect that life at least. Hey, you need to protect life at its conception, church, by the way. At conception. I was fearfully and wonderfully made in my mother's womb. And so are you. It failed. It didn't pass. It was like 53 were for it and like 44 were against it and the rest weren't there for the vote. But they needed 60 votes. It's how it is in the Senate when you get a bill, I guess. In fact, if you're aware of that, I'm going to be a little more blunt. I know my 501c3 rights. We're not allowed as a church to go out and support a particular, you know, like put a political sign on our land. And we shouldn't be, by the way. No, that's fine. Because there are a lot of churches that would vote the other way that I would vote anyway, believe it or not. And Senator Casey had already made his position clear on Judge Kavanaugh in September before the vote. I emailed him. I said, I respect you. I respected your father. He's a Democrat, by the way. I can say this, I'm not a Democrat. If you didn't know that, I'm not a Democrat. Is that okay? I'm just going to clear the air here. I'm not a Democrat. Senator Casey, I appreciate you. I voted for your father. His father was the only Democrat my parents ever voted for governor. 1980, I think. Why? Because Robert Casey, the father, was pro-life. As a Democrat, he was pro-life. I voted for him, too. I started to vote when I was in 78. So yeah, I voted for the first election. I voted for a Democrat. Well, it's not a matter about Republicans or Democrats. It's not a matter of Republicans or Democrats. It's a matter of who's going to do what upholds this Constitution, first and foremost. Okay. Anyway, September, I wrote him a letter. I appreciate you. I said, I really would ask your support on Judge Kavanaugh. I believe he'll be pro-life. I said, I know your stance on it. I know your father's stance on it. I would ask your support. He wrote back, and again, I imagine it was one of his people, but it was a very nice letter, very well thought, by the way, and well put. But basically he said, I'm just not for the judges, those 25 judges that President Trump has on his itinerary, his potential. He says, I'm not in favor of any of them. So, it was, I mean, it was a nice letter. It was professional. It was kind. So we disagreed. This week, the vote was taken. We have two senators in Pennsylvania, right? You know that. The Republican, of course, voted to support the Born Alive Protection Survivors Protection Act. You would expect that. Senator Casey voted for it as well, to his credit. So I took the time to send him an email. I hope some of you did too. If you didn't, you need to. Saying, regardless of our difference of opinions on some things, sir, I appreciate you. You've done well. I said, you've just made us very proud to be from Pennsylvania. I said, I suspect your father would be very proud of you too. You got to tell these people. You got to get involved. Don't allow the country, take this the right way. If we allow, you know, the old phrase is, what needs for a country to go down the tubes is for good people to do nothing. That's a paraphrase, but that's pretty close to what it says. And it didn't pass. And the, well, it's a political ploy. The law already exists. It's, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And this is needed. That's why the House voted on it. If it wasn't needed, the House wouldn't voted on it a year ago. It's vital to protect the child. Again, they should be protected at conception, but at least when they come out of the womb, when they're trying to murder them and they survive the murder, they get a second chance to kill the child. Are you kidding me? But I tell you what, I don't lose hope at all. Not whatsoever. Am I concerned that the hand of God and the favor of the Lord can be removed from this country? Church, I am. I am. Not afraid, but I'm concerned about that. But my responsibility then is to act and to speak out and to be courageous and encourage the people that I have the honor to minister with every week to be courageous and say, we got to take a stand. They're not voting on the color of the carpet down on the Senate floor. They're voting on the lives of, and then others would say, well, it doesn't happen that often. I'm thinking it happens once. I remember there was a bill around to put seat butts on school buses years ago. They said that would only save one life a year. I'm thinking, if it was your child, it would be worth $10 million to you and more. You couldn't put a price tag on it. Just put seat belts in the school buses. It would only save one life a year. I'm thinking, I can't believe you said that. We won't have time to even finish, just fine, what he did about it. Because the next thing he does, he breaks down the idol of the bronze serpent. It's an amazing story. It's a powerful story about the bronze serpent. It relates to Jesus Christ himself. Because in John chapter 3, starting at verse 10, and I think it's 14, Jesus is telling these people about himself, why he's here on earth. And he said, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, the serpent that was impaled on a stick that Moses put up there, showing the death of the serpent, because the fiery serpents had been sent by God as a plague, and they were biting and killing the people. And God says, take a fiery serpent, put it on a staff, hold it up. When the people look at it, they live. Jesus would say in John chapter 3, verse 14, as the Son of Man must be lifted up. What did he mean? He was lifted up, meaning crucified. That it's synonymous. As the Son of Man is going to be crucified on the cross, just like Moses put that up there, those that look at it will live. And Jesus says, therefore, and you all know the verse, that therefore for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him, whoever will look and live, will not perish but have everlasting life. That's the bronze serpent. I'm giving you an introduction for next week as I must close. I'm going to ask Sarah to please, before we do the altar song, call songs, Sarah, just please come and begin to play softly. Close your Bibles. We're going to bring the lights down, and in a moment I'll call the worship team up, and we have some amazing music here to begin to close. I've talked about a lot of things today. I've talked about courage. I've talked about Hezekiah. I've talked about the failures of the kings of Israel until it came time to Hezekiah to be born. In fact, I have a, if I can find it here. I hope it'll. One writer said this, and again, think of the legacy that Hezekiah had. He knew, even David, though, was a man after God's own heart, how he had a major failure. But he did not fail on behalf of the nation. But all those kings before him, right up to his father, failed after failure. After they did pretty good, but they kept failing. And here's Hezekiah. You look at this, and it says he did right in the eyes of the Lord. You almost expect to see a but, because there's a but after everybody's name before him. There's always a but. But this, but that. Not Hezekiah. And church, my challenge to us is to leave a godly legacy. It doesn't matter about my reputation of the past or your reputation of the past. I'll tell you what you will be remembered for is your godliness and your commitment to the things of the kingdom. That's what I've done enough funerals, I can tell you that. And if there's not a godly legacy, and I do some of those funerals too, and I'm blessed to do them, but I'll tell you what, it's difficult. I can say what a nice person they were. I can say how well they were loved. But I'll tell you what, it's a tragedy when I say, I don't know where, I end up having to say, wherever, and you fill in the name, wherever so-and-so is today, they will tell you that hell and heaven are a real place. That's what I say. And I don't make any assessments because that's up to God to say. Church, I want us to leave a godly legacy as individuals, as families, as a church, as a region. I want this to be known as a godly region. I want it to be that when people come through here, you know what people say when they come through the doors of this church? I want them to say that about this region. That's what I want. The people that say, I sense the presence of God here, I want them to sense the presence of God there. I want them to say, when Mandy walked into the office, things shifted a little bit. They know her, and they know that the type of talk that they would participate in is time to pull off on that because a shift has taken place. And it's not even about Mandy as much as the presence that she carries. And Denny, things are different. The music that he begins to listen to at work is Christian music. And it's like, now it's not pagan music anymore. And people are saying, well, you know, but they begin, because they respect Denny, they respect what he's doing. And all of you, I could tell stories like that all of you in the schools and in the workplace, in the post office, no matter where you are. It's like, I'm a carrier of the presence of God. I doubled as other things in my life. I've done a number of things in my life. My main responsibilities would be a carrier of the presence of God, and in my old career was to institute justice in every region that I was assigned by God to say, this is justice, this is right, this is wrong, and I'm going to do something about it. And so it must be, believers, that must be our heritage and our culture and our DNA.